Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning, and I also want to tell you guys, please keep us in prayer, because Roy dealing with Ryder this morning was interesting. That's all I could say without throwing him under the bus. So I want to get on with the show. Today's topic has to do with the benefit of therapy. Now, when we talk about the benefit of therapy, we know that there's pros and cons to everything. And a lot of times, individuals have a perception, a stigma, or a misperception about something. Now, the show today is designed to educate individuals, answer some questions, give them some resources to help clear up some things as it relates to therapy. And a lot of times, individuals used to believe that only crazy people went to therapy, or only the rich or the elite went to therapy, and it had to be long-term. There was a perception of someone laying on a black couch in a clipboard. Many individuals had this perception that they were going to either be given a shot, or some people would say, well, can you fix my child? Now, the problem is a lot of that is, like I said, a myth and a misperception, or maybe it could have been somebody's experience or something that used to happen along the way. However, times have changed, things have changed, situations have changed. So my question to the listeners is, do you ever feel too overwhelmed to deal with your problem? I want you to know you're not alone. Also, are you struggling with a personal, mental health, relational issue and don't know what to do? If that's the case, this show may be for you, because therapy can help if you give it a try. Now, if you want to call in on the show today, you can give me a call at 516-387-1914. I only ask that everybody be respectful to the callers and to the listeners so that we don't offend anyone. Because like I said, when you know better, you do better. And a lot of times, this subject is so taboo that many individuals don't know what to do. Now, I'm going to join my guest on the air. Okay, my computer is taking forever. Hi, this is Jeanette. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Hi, Jeanette. Good morning. This is Amalia.
Good morning. I want to thank you for joining me here today, as we're going to be talking about today in regards to talking about the benefits of therapy. And it's interesting because I've been on my LinkedIn account, and I've been, you know, requesting the and adding a lot of individuals to my page, even though me and social media, we're not the best of friends, because me doing all this stuff, I don't know what the heck I'd be doing half the time. But a lot of the individuals on my page are either in radio producing, or they're therapists, or they're counselors, or they're life coaches. And this is a field, Amalia, that appears to be growing. And I like the fact that it's growing, because there's a lot of individuals out there that are struggling with a lot of different issues. And some may not even believe that they're struggling. But before I even introduce you and get your input on this, I want to talk about something that I wrote on the air in regards to the episodes. And it indicated, when life throws you a curveball, what are you going to do? If you have no idea, therapy may be for you. There appears to be a stigma when it comes to attending therapy, as some individuals are still under the impression that therapy is for crazy or weak-minded individuals. That is, however, far from the truth. Others also believe, you know, they have their misperceptions and belief in regards to the couch. Truth be told, therapy can help one handle emotions from problems or stressors, even if they're not dramatically life-altering or traumatic. Therapy is well known for its problem-solving techniques. Now, there are many benefits to attending therapy, as psychotherapy involves talking to a professional, as a professional relationship is developed. It is devoted to the well-being and the psychological healing, meaning relieving emotional pain, reducing symptoms, improving relationships, or changing behaviors or lifestyles that may be impacting one's life. This is done by developing trust, educating, providing tools, skills, and resources to help one reach their life goal or balance one's life. Now, Amalia, when it comes to therapy, and I'm just looking at a typo, every time I type something on here, it always gets messed up. But tell me, Amalia, what made you go into this field?
I'm not a traditional therapist. I think the field sought me out, so I don't know if that's correct for me. But I had always wanted to be a helper. So I thought in my career path, I thought I could help people through medicine. So I was actually going that route. I wanted to physically heal people. And a series of events happened, and I volunteered at a center for child abuse treatment. It was supposed to be a summer internship, not even an internship. I just wanted to volunteer during the summer in medical school. And they offered me a job. And at that time, the way that my life was going, I was 22 at the time. I thought I was going to be married and have children. And I thought, you know, medicine is going to be too much compromise, I felt, for a relationship and for motherhood and all that. Not that I've been married or have children. But at that time in my life, when I was offered that opportunity to become a social worker full-time, I took it and I said, you know, I'll put medicine on hold. So that's why I feel that that therapy and social work has always called me versus something that I sought. So long story short, I have now been in the field for 15 years, and it wasn't until I got my master's degree in social work where I learned really the beauty of this field, where we can do so much help. And we do sometimes do need that medical, you know, that treatment to treat something medically. But most of these medical problems stem from a psychological imbalance. So what keeps luring me in is I've always been a helper since I was young. I mean, I think it's just generations of my family being helpers. I just was always told that the way to help is through medicine. I mean, Western medicine with medication and that.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Amalia, because, like I said, the field do choose someone, and someone do, in other cases, go into this field because they do want to help. They do want to change individuals. And a lot of times when we're in this field, the first people we want to change is our family or our situation. And, you know, I had a person tell me one time they came into the Center for the Treatment of Addiction. They said they wanted to be a drug counselor because the Lord told them, or God told them, that they would make a good counselor. And other people told them that. And when I started going in depth with that person never came back. And I had her sit in on a group just to see, and those clients was tearing her butt up too. So when we're talking about helping individuals, you know, there's pros, there's cons, there's risks, there's liabilities. There's a lot that goes on in this field. And I tell people all the time, you have to have thick skin if you want to be a therapist, and you also have to basically know what you're talking about. Because it is, when I talk about that therapeutic relationship. Now, I want to give the listeners some information because we know that there's benefits, but then there's also risk. So I want to first start off with talking about some of the common risks that are associated with psychotherapy. A lot of times, there are potential risks to psychotherapy, and people may initially sometimes feel worse as the therapy progress. To me, it's like going to the gym. They say no pain, no gain. I don't want to do no sit-ups because I don't want my stomach hurting. A lot of times, individuals don't really want to go to therapy because they're going to be dealing with some stuff, uncovering some issues, and things that may make them feel a little bit uncomfortable, and they may not want to feel vulnerable. But in rare cases, psychotherapy may even trigger some people to have thoughts about sometimes wanting to hurt themselves or end their lives. But when this happens, your therapist will be able to help you understand and cope with these feelings safely and can direct therapy to be more supportive until you feel stronger. It is always important that you tell the person you're working with if you're having frightening, dangerous thoughts or feelings, if you're considering to harm yourself or someone else. Now, one of the things in talking about getting people into the door, Amalia, one of the reasons why I do the radio, why I, even in therapy, as you know, I'm not a traditional therapist, is I try to help individuals by being able to connect with them. Because growing up in Compton, I didn't know nothing about therapy. I didn't know nothing about a therapist. Didn't know nothing about social workers, CPS. All of that stuff was foreign to me. And even today as a therapist, I would say, and I still say, if it wasn't for some of the people in my life, I don't know if some of these therapists would be able to understand some of the things that I have dealt with. I attended a training, and we were talking about trauma. And a lot of times, individuals may not view things as a problem because they're used to it or they think it's normal. So when someone comes to them and say, well, maybe you need to talk to somebody or maybe you might need a little help, some people don't want to hear that. Now, I want to say, and I mentioned before, that therapy can help you handle your emotions from problems or stressors, even if they're not dramatically life-threatening or traumatic. Now, because sometimes we talk about therapy, even though it has to do with problem-solving techniques, it helps you to dissect the problem and help you figure out how to solve it. Many times individuals go to therapy because they want somebody to tell them what to do. They want to tell them how to live their life, and that's not what it's about, because we're not going to get too in-depth, but there's a difference between transference and counter-transference. But when I put this on my Facebook page, Amalia, I found this image, and it had on there, and it had like a poll. And the poll was leading people in a lot of different directions. One said advice, help, support, tip, guidance, and assistance. And that's one of the things that therapy is known for. There's different types of therapy. There's talk therapy. You know, we got cognitive behavioral. We got, you know, you one of the things that you always talk about, the different types of techniques, and things are changing. But talk therapy is also known as psychotherapy. And as you're talking things out, sometimes it helps you to be able to process things a little differently. But having a good therapist is very important. What do you think about that, Amalia, in regards to having a good therapy?
We'll start at that sentence. That's crucial, because if you don't have a good relationship with your therapist, then you're not going to get the help that you need, because you don't feel comfortable enough to talk to them about things. Or if you feel, you know, sometimes people remind us of someone, and if your therapist reminds you of someone you don't like, that's what we call counter-transference. It's not going to be beneficial. So when I would make referrals to a psychiatrist or to a medical doctor, I always tell them, you have a right, and you can change your therapist, or you can change whoever your service worker is, because it's not going to be of any use to either one of you if you don't feel comfortable. Another thing is, as you mentioned, going to therapy, you're going to deal with some stuff that you have been hiding and pushing and making a dark secret back in your memory. And when these feelings come to surface, and if you don't have a good therapist to support you when it's this overwhelming wave of feelings that come over you, when you're talking about some very severe trauma or some secret that you've been holding for a long time, because that's what therapists do. They hear your darkest secrets. They know you more than you know yourself. And if you don't feel comfortable opening up to them, then when you have these feelings of maybe, you know, extreme depression, your therapist is the one that's going to help you during that very dark moment. My mom used to always say, medicine never tastes good. So that was her, that was her catch-all for everything. So medicine isn't supposed to taste good. Medicine isn't supposed to be easy. I mean, we cover it up with cherry flavor and all of that, but medicine it's not a spoonful of sugar, like Mary Poppins says. So we have to keep that in mind, that in order for us to get better, we have to go through some struggle.
Correct. One of the things you just said, you talked about counter-transference. Counter-transference is when the therapist is projecting their feelings onto the client, meaning if the client is reminding the therapist of someone, transference is appropriate because that's when the client is projecting feelings onto the therapist, where the therapist reminds the client of someone, and that is appropriate because, like I said, the therapists have to have thick skin, because a lot of times people are coming in and they may be broken or they may just want somebody to talk to. You know, like I said, growing up in Compton, we didn't know that these things even existed because we thought we could go to church, we could talk to our friends, you know, we could talk to our family members. And a lot of times people will think that, or they used to say, what goes on in my house stays in my house.
Right.
You know, we didn't want to think that we were crazy, and they thought that they would change too much. And some people had the perception of, well, therapy make me happy, and how long is it going to last? How much is it going to cost? What if I can't afford it? So these are some of the things that come to people's mind, and I'm going to be answering some of those questions. But one of the things is we're talking about in regards to therapy and some of the benefits. Research has shown that most of the common approaches to therapies are about equally successful. In general, psychotherapy clients are better off after therapy than they were before it. And they're better off after therapy than 80% of untreated individuals. So therapy is very helpful for a lot of different things. And I want to share some of these things. And I was basically brainstorming and coming up with, why would some individuals need therapy? One, unforgiveness. A lot of us have held on to a lot of unforgiveness, a lot of emotional things. It can help us to organize our thoughts, give us a reality check, having a third party to basically mediate, having someone to listen. We can, in therapy, to address childhood traumas, dealing with your past. And I mean, a trauma is on the rise, Amalia. We're now looking at how trauma is impacting individuals' lives. It helps with addictions, whether it's addiction to drugs, alcohol, sex, gambling, shopping, relationship issues, bad breakups, marital issues, premarital issues, which can also reduce a lot of divorces if individuals go through premarital counseling, divorce and mediation, talking about your sex life, anger, depression. You brought up suicidal ideations. They've also found that a lot of individuals' lives have been saved where the suicidality reduced after going to therapy. Anxiety, mental health issues, regardless of whether it's from depression to Asperger's to ADHD, stress, grief, loss, death, life transitions, spiritual counseling, employment, vocational, parenting, co-parenting, whether a person needs motivation, encouragement, education, skills, tools, or need to learn techniques. Amalia, when I just bring that up, that touched everybody across the spectrum in regards to things that we deal with in our life. And a lot of times, many of us are afraid. We don't know how to do it. We don't know how to take that first step. Now, what would you say or give the listeners some information in regards to what is that first step? How do you take that first step?
Well, I think the first step is if you're even questioning, that could be a first step. I mean, I think there's a stigma when people say you should go to therapy, and we underline it as you're crazy, go pay someone to fix you. And that's not what therapy is. I mean, therapy is to make your good life better or to, you know, I had asked one of my coworkers who charges a lot of money for her therapy, and I said, how do you justify charging your clients, because she doesn't take medical insurance, she's cash only. And she said, you know, I look at it as a service, like getting your hair done, getting your nails done. This is another type of wellness. So we have to look at, you know, we have illness and we have wellness. So we have biologically, you have a medical problem, you go to a doctor to get treatment for this medical problem. Wellness is you want to make your good life better. So if you have this feeling that your life is okay, but it could be better, I think that's the first step. If other people are saying, you know, I'm concerned, you're not coming out as much, you don't seem that happy, what's going on? You're not dressing up, you've gained some weight, or you've lost a lot of weight. If other people are concerned for you, that could be a sign. Or sometimes, you know, are you irritable? So maybe all of this stress is causing you to not be yourself. Are you constantly comparing yourself to other people? Are you, you know, with social media, we're always seeing how the highlight reels of everybody else's life, and you're like, oh man, when I go out, I don't take pictures like that, or how come I'm never on vacation like this person? And so if you have this constant feelings of jealousy or why, or comparing your life to someone else's, like my life isn't as valuable as this other person, that could be that too. Or, you know, in your relationships, I've been with this person for this long and it's just the spark is gone. I don't know if I want to stay or for how long I'm going to stay, or I'm just staying for the children, then that's another reason that that's a sign too, that you might want someone to talk to. And we've been talking a lot about psychotherapy, which is, you know, talk therapy, where you go and you talk to someone for about an hour. And that right there is already meditative. So if you don't have your coping skills or your coping mechanisms where you're spending some alone time to deal with these, these thoughts that come to you, then I used to work with seniors. And with the seniors, I learned a lot as a young person of what their regrets in life were. And growing up, I mean, you know, as they were raising, getting married, getting their careers, their professions, their children, they would always put themselves last. And now that they're were in a nursing home, their life regrets weren't like, oh, I never discovered a cure to cancer. It was never that. It was, I never got a chance to see the Grand Canyon, and now they can't because they have oxygen tanks. Or, you know, I was never at my son's baseball game because I was working too much. And so the root of it all was that they were never taking that 1 hour out of the day for themselves. Like, that 1 hour doesn't have to be therapy, but at least 1 week, 1 hour out of the week should be a therapeutic activity. If that means professional therapy, that's a good, an hour well spent. But, yoga day, you know, there's a list that we've talked about many times of how we can relieve our stress.
A lot of times, some individuals go to therapy on their own. Sometimes individuals, it's suggested to them. Some people give individuals an ultimatum, and sometimes clients are court ordered. So there's a lot of different ways people make them into your door. And one of the things is, and I found some information on how to find a therapist and know that they're right for you in 7 easy steps. And one of the things it talks about is, the first thing, you got to know what you want to talk about. A lot of times I get phone calls all the time, Amalia, especially because I'm on several different insurance panels with EAP. I'm a substance abuse professional, so I do a lot of work in a lot of different areas. So I'm well-rounded, whether we're talking about domestic violence issues, anger issues, drug and alcohol, parenting, co-parenting. So I'm all over the place. Now, you first person, when you say you want therapy, figure out what you want from therapy. Because you don't want a therapist to just be picking your brain, trying to figure out why you're there. I like watching movies, and there were some movies that came to my head. One was, because I love Tyler Perry movies, and he did the one with Madea, I think it was Madea Goes to Jail, and she had to go see Dr. Phil. And when she was in Dr. Phil's office for anger management, and Dr. Phil asked her, why are you angry? She said, well, why are you angry? Well, why are you angry? Why? And it was just going back and forth and back and forth. And Dr. Phil was getting so frustrated with her because in her mind, she had a right to be angry. So a lot of times before an individual goes to a therapist, they've already kind of held on to these things for so long, sometimes they really don't want to let it go. And it's like with Dr. Lisa Romain, she always come to me and say, when I go to her venting about something, she'll say, do you want me to talk or do you want me to listen? And then she throw me that miracle question. So how is that working for you? And I get mad. I'm like, apparently it ain't working. So first step, finding out what it is that you want out of therapy. The second step, decide what kind of therapy you want. A lot of times, Amalia, again, people call me. They're trying to find the difference between wanting a psychiatrist, a psychologist. So I want to spend a little time talking about that. Because we have a doctor, like you said, you wanted to go into the medical field, and the doctor pretty much works with a lot of your symptoms. And also, sometimes things could be life or death. So we're not talking about a person having cancer, even though stress can be related to cancer, and it's like a sore and it can spread. But when we're talking about a mental doctor, a mental health is a little different from talking about or going to one that's treating you for heart disease or diabetes or things of that nature. So let's start first with the psychiatrist. A lot of times I get phone calls where individuals are wanting medication, and I always have to tell them I do not prescribe medication. But because they automatically associate therapy with medication, or sometimes they don't want to be on meds, but they want to talk it out, which is fine. But if a referral is needed to a psychiatrist or to an MD, a therapist can do that. But psychiatrist is just like a doctor. However, they specialize in pharmaceuticals. So they do prescribe medications for depression, anxiety, mood stabilizers, and things of that nature. In regards to psychologists, a psychologist basically do more psychological testing. Some psychologists also do therapy, but very few, because more are more into testing, research, things of that nature. Then you have individuals that have the PsyD. A PsyD is kind of in between an individual with a master's degree or a license, and because they do have a PsyD, which is a little lower than a PhD, but sometimes individuals get confused with the letters behind a person's name. Then you have the LCSW, which are the licensed clinical social workers, and you have the LMFTs, which are the licensed marriage family therapists. Then you have the LPCCs. Now, sometimes we get confused with that too, Amalia, because the licensed clinical social workers normally work in hospital settings and they do more social work, where an MFT can do the same thing, but they view MFTs as more being focused around relationships and marital issues and family issues, but they do kind of cross over. And in this field, we also not only educating the listeners, but educating individuals in this field, because a lot of people don't know. Then we have also life coaches. Life coaches, they can have a degree or they may not have a degree, but they are certified life coaches, and they help guide individuals as a support, encouragement, and areas that is related to therapy, but it's a little different than therapy. So, but you do have to find out what kind of therapy you want. The internet can be a great source, but you also want to make sure that it's what you need, because it's like the old saying, well, you know, you may want family therapy, you may want individual therapy, you may want couples counseling, you may want mental health counseling, but take the time to find out what your presenting issue is, and then that will also help you. Find some therapists who seem promising. There's good therapists out there, there's bad therapists out there. But sometimes I want to say, Amalia, a lot of my clients have helped me step my game up when it comes to therapy. Because you can learn a lot from your clients.
Right.
Just like the therapist can teach the client sometimes have to teach the therapist, especially when we're dealing with cultural issues. I've had individuals, because I'm African-American, they walked in my office, told that I was African-American, and walked out. And I'll be like, wow. And sometimes it's my own African-American culture, because they're so used to thinking that she can't tell me nothing, she don't know, or don't want another person to really know because they don't want to feel vulnerable. What do you think about that when you're talking about, first of all, knowing what it is you want to talk about, and secondly, making sure you have that connection?
Well, the connection part I think we've touched on, but I think culturally, and I struggled with that myself when I first became a social worker, because I didn't have a history. Actually, to begin with, I had never heard of social work. So that was a struggle in itself. But I felt that I couldn't be a good counselor because I thought that there was going to be a stigma that since I didn't have a history of substance abuse, then how could I relate to this, you know, my client that was in front of me. Later on, when I was getting my master's, I actually have a concentration in military social work, and I'm a civilian. So I have no history of the military life. So that was another thing, but because I had already been a therapist for those with substance abuse, then I knew that that was irrelevant. Because there is some to that, that I've been through your walk and your journey, and I've been there, so I understand. But with years of practice and years of experience, I have seen firsthand people who have been in a worse situation and have come out better. And I've learned from them what they have done, and I have dedicated my life to knowing. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you're the one who's seeking help, and you really need to find someone that you're comfortable with. In regards to knowing what type you want, I mean, I think when we think therapy, we think traditional talk therapy, but there's art therapy, play therapy, equine therapy, there's light therapy, there's so many times, like animal-assisted therapy, which is equine. The reason that equine helps a lot with teenagers, if there's anyone who's listening for their teens, is because horses, they mirror your mental well-being. So if you're upset, the horse will get upset. So teens do very, very well in animal-assisted therapy. We've also seen, you know, those that are in jail where they take animals that are about to be put down and they train them to be assistant dogs. And we've also seen how those in the jail system are doing very well by training these animals. I think we're also moving to eye movement desensitization, which is something that was that's been very effective with military veterans. It's a type of psychotherapy where you think about a traumatic event, and you use just I lost the word, but what you do is you tap and you use eye movement to go into that traumatic event. And what you're doing is looking at the root of your trauma and kind of cutting off that branch from that tree. And so you'll see that because of this trauma I had, I did this 5 years later and this happened to me 20 years later. So there is a lot of type of therapy. It's kind of overwhelming in a sense. So if you're one that likes to talk, traditional talk therapy, and but if you're not one that likes to talk, there are all kinds of therapy available for you. So don't be deterred just because we have this vision of therapy is laying on a couch where someone has their clipboard next to you.
Well, I tell people, I don't have no couch and I got old beat up chairs. But the thing is, don't knock it till you try it. And if you haven't gone to therapy before, like I said, you may have heard some things or, you know, it may not be true. But it's just like, you know, don't, like I said, one of the things is make your way, find your way. And one of the things about going to therapy is if you feel uncomfortable in any way or it doesn't seem, your therapist don't seem interested in helping you or has an agenda or you just don't connect, you have no obligation to see that person again unless you're court-ordered. And if you're court-ordered, you also want to make sure you're able to get a transfer to another facility. But we start talking about this. Somebody always want to call me when I am on the air. But one of the things is you want to connect with a professional, competent therapist that won't judge you, push you to do things you don't feel good about, or force you in a specific agenda, like reconciling with your estranged parents and definitely not reconciling with an estranged spouse. You want the person to be skilled, professional, and help you figure out what you really need, not what they think you should need. Because one of the things I always tell individuals is sometimes we get our needs and our wants confused, where you may feel you want something and don't need it, or you may need it and don't want it. Another thing that I want to touch on is individuals need to know that you won't be in therapy forever. Now, a lot of times, depending on what's going on, but the average patient normally starts seeing improvement after the first session. And the vast majority of patients only see a therapist maybe 3 to 10 sessions. And despite what individuals seen in movies or on TV, therapy isn't usually a lifelong commitment. And I want to say, among you, unless you get phone calls, I always ask the client, what is your presenting issue? What's going on? And if a person tells me, well, I had a therapist and I've been in therapy all my life, or I had a therapist for 10 years and my therapist told me she moved, and I'm thinking, did she move because you were driving her crazy? You know, so I'm kind of cautious when it comes to that because I like more solution-focused therapy. I like, you know, tell me the problem, let's come up with a solution, and let's keep it moving, instead of trying to draw people out, because then you're not getting anywhere. Now, not only is it, it don't have to be a lifelong commitment, it's basically today's therapy is more goal-oriented, and it focuses on teaching you coping skills quickly and efficiently. Sometimes the client may feel like you're rushing them, and it's not that. You don't want to enable them because a lot of times individuals have been traumatized and the therapist should never re-traumatize them or handicap them or enable them. And one of the things that we got a lot going on now, Amalia, is when we talk about codependency issues. You don't want to develop in regards to a codependent issue or codependent relationship with your therapist. Because boundaries are very, very important. And a lot of times individuals struggle with those boundaries. Now, if you want to call in, if you have any questions for Amalia or myself, you can give us a call at 516-387-1914. Again, 516-387-1914. Again, we're talking about the benefits of therapy because a lot of times individuals don't know. what to do, don't know where to go. And like I said, we're going to be providing some information because no matter what you're going through, there's always someone that you can connect with to help you. Now, again, you may want to love, be loved, and accept yourself. You may want to make a good marriage or be a great mother, father, talking about your relationships. You may want to thrive in your career. You may want to understand your purpose in life. Amalia, let's talk about that a little bit, because a lot of times individuals get stuck with trying to find out their purpose in life. And even though we know that many therapists love to dive in and help you find out who you are on a deeper level, but helping you uncover that passion buried under the busyness of life and the desire for this sometimes can run it, we can run into some challenges. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think instead of rethinking the wheel, I immediately think of, oh my goodness, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I'm always telling my clients. So for those that don't remember high school psychology, we have a pyramid. At the very base, Maslow listed our physiological needs, which are air, water, food, shelter, sleeping, clothing, reproducing. Mm-hmm. But more important than our basic needs is the top of that pyramid. And the very top of that pyramid is self-actualization. So that self-actualization is our desire to become who we are supposed to be. So that's our end goal, is being that person that we're supposed to be. What's the purpose of me here? Why am I stuck in this fluorescent lighting on a Monday when I could be at the beach in Costa Rica? Why am I doing this? What is the meaning of this? Why am I feeling this way? Why am I not where I'm supposed to be? So if we look at Maslow, I'm just going to stick to the psychology right now. If we look at Maslow, we have to do steps to get to that end goal. Just like there's all these quotes about dreams and goals, you know, goals are just a dream without steps, and a step becomes a plan, and that's how we get to our goals. So we have to make sure that we are getting our basic needs, we're being safe, we have our self-esteem, we have the sense of loving and belonging. And those are the ways that we feel that we have a purposeful life. There's so many TED Talks and YouTube, and we have all of these spiritual leaders and all these speakers that we can listen to. And that's great, and that helps us momentarily, but we really do need to do the work of figuring out what is my self-actualization? What would it mean to me to be happy? What would that look like? I mean, in therapy, we use the magic wand intervention, where if I gave you this magic wand and tomorrow life was perfect, what would that look like to you? So we do need to take the time to actually sit down and think about what it is that we desire and we want, so we can make our plan. And all of that, the first step is making sure that we have our basic needs. And I mean, the Maslow's works, even in our work setting. So even if at work you don't have basic things like, I don't know, air conditioning, it's very hard for you to become a good worker if you're not getting your basic needs. If in your relationship you don't feel loved and belonged, it's going to be very hard for you to be that wife or that husband that you thought, or that partner that you thought you were going to be when you started this relationship. So Maslow's, it translates into all aspects of our life. But for me, the purpose of life is figuring out what would be a perfect life for me, and then do the steps to get there. I don't know if that's
correct. Well, it goes back into self-actualization, and a lot of times we're talking about all those different issues, and especially trauma, because dipping and dabbing into trauma, it can be such an overwhelming experience, and reactions to individuals that in dealing with PTSD, a lot of times individuals don't even know where to start. So you're thinking of safety is one area, you know, and going to therapy, learning how to process things, examine issues, and trying to help, like I said, reach your goal. Now, I want to go back into some things. I remember when my mother was dealing with cancer, and I had contacted the Americans, the Cancer Association. The first thing my mother thought about was price. I can't afford it. If I got to pay money, and I don't want to spend all my money. Now, the price of therapy can be costly, and I know you shared a little bit about one of your friends that only see cash clients and they're not on any insurance panel, but most therapy is covered through your insurance.
Right.
And I want to give you some information in regards to behavior health. We have what's called behavior health. We have mental health. Behavior health basically focuses on behaviors. Mental health normally deals with the depression, the anxiety, and a lot of childhood pervasive developmental disorders. Now, that is covered under your insurance policy. But the problem is a lot of times we get confused. Now, individuals may have a copay. They may have only a certain number of sessions that they can attend throughout their insurance policies. But call the number on the back of your insurance card, and they will be able to help you, guide you in the right direction. If you are active duty military or retired military, there's also places you can go to seek counseling. Even if you were in the service and you were discharged from the service, you can go through the VA. You know, if you are employed, employers now use what's called EAP, which is an employee assistance program. And through EAP, it is free. It doesn't cost you anything. It's paid for by your employer. And I want to say one of the difference between using your insurance versus using EAP or using going through Military One Source or going through, basically Military One Source is the EAP, Military One Source, focus more on relationship issues and issues other than mental health, behavioral health. It could be included, but they also focus on other issues. In the military, they also have what's called military family life counselors. They also, it's more short-term solution-focused therapy, but cannot deal with more domestic violence issues. But a lot of times, Amalia, individuals will call me and they have insurance and they want to do couples counseling. Couples counseling is not covered under your mental health or your behavior health. Unless you're dealing with issues of anxiety, depression, things of that nature, you can bring people into your session, but it cannot, because it's not billable under your insurance. So that's one thing that individuals need to know, and that's when you can utilize EAP services or other things. If you're also looking for a therapist, you can call 211. 211, which is InfoLink in whatever area you live. I know in the state of California, they have information where they can give you information numbers or whether it's the Access Crisis Hotline. There's numbers, there's places that can give you referrals. But you can always pick up the phone or go online and look for some type of assistance to guide you. Psychology Today is another tool where individuals can find therapists in your area. They have what's called 211 intervention if you're looking for a drug or alcohol counselor. There's life coaches. There's another thing which is called I found on the air, I mean online, which is goodtherapy.org. They also have a list of resources. They have telehealth. Telehealth right now is another thing that's growing, Amalia, because a lot of times individuals don't want to be inconvenienced by coming, leaving their home.
Mm-hmm.
It also reduces the number of no-shows. Through telehealth, you can be in the privacy of your own home, and you can still connect with a therapist because they have a confidential database where they're able to either do it by phone or do it online by connecting with your therapist. And there's also free counseling centers, too. So do not let the fact that you feel that you can't afford it keep you out of therapy. Now, the cash price can vary. It could be, I've seen prices as low as $60, as high as close to $200 per session. And that could be either for couples counseling or individual counseling. So the prices can vary. Now, what do you think about all that, Amalia?
Well, where do we begin? There is a lot of resources. And the cost is very one of the, you know, the negatives of therapy. But, you know, just how my colleague, she looks at it as something that we spend $100, $200 on a new outfit, on a night out, and, you know, things are not as tangible as getting to your inner feelings and your well-being. So I think it's money well spent, personally. I can easily think of other ways I could spend $100. I mean, that's a steak dinner or two. I mean, for me, it's about steaks, good steaks. A good steak is 80 plus. So, but I think at the same time, we have some really good interns as well. I mean, I'm actually, I am a master's social worker, but I had to do 3,200 hours after I got my master's degree in order to sit for my state exam. So don't just push off the intern. Don't be so quick to say, no, I don't want someone who's not licensed yet, because they could be, even though, like myself, I went and got my master's after 10 years of being a social worker. So mm-hmm. I had already been doing the work. I just wasn't licensed. So there's a lot of knowledgeable people out there that do not have the formal education. So maybe you have someone in your life that just has really good insight. And there's a lot of people out there that have really good insight and give some sound advice, but they just do not have the license. And if it's someone that you trust and you're open to, go move forward with that. But
and you know what? And that's true, Amalia. And even with the interns work under the supervision of a licensed individual. And a lot of people don't know that, because I've had individuals where they have went to big organizations and they were working with an mm-hmm. intern, and they have the perception, well, that's just an intern. No, that person has a master's degree. That person is licensed eligible. So don't be, if you don't want to be judged, don't judge nobody else. Now, and like I said, therapy is well known for its problem-solving techniques and its reputation tools for overcoming anxiety, depression, and addiction. And those mm-hmm. are some of the things. And therapy can be in what they call an interpersonal laboratory. And one of the things they say, it's a way of working with cognitions, emotions, interpersonal relationships in a way that helps one manage their emotions and learn to see things from a different perspective. In other words, you don't have to go through a huge life event or trauma to benefit from therapy, because talking with a professional allows you to get a sense of how you appear to other people, helps you to get feedback on whatever you're feeling, and offers insights on how those emotions are affecting your everyday life. Because a lot of times people don't even know. They don't even get it. Now, you spoke on the interns. I want to say something in regards to the life coaches. Life coaches can hold one accountable for their goals. Because whether, like I said, people want to lose weight or make a significant career change, talking to a professional life coach can help one get over those mental blocks that individuals encounter with any challenges. I just went on, was Wednesday, Amalia? I went to go see Iyana Van Zandt. And Iyana Van Zandt is a life coach. Iyana Van Zandt does fix my life. Even though Iyana Van Zandt studied law, I believe she practiced as an attorney for many years, she's a life coach. So now she's on television looking like she's doing therapy, but she is a life coach, unless she went back and got a license in regards to therapy, which I don't believe she did. But don't underestimate anyone, because a lot of times when you start talking about life experiences, your education, a lot of different things that you can help a person, but you do have to be able to connect with that individual. And the therapist also have to know when to refer. When to refer out.
Right.
So basically, you can't help this person, because I've had clients that we weren't getting anywhere. And I have to let them know, okay, you know what, I have to send you to someone else, or let me give you these referrals, or I might not be the therapist for you. I'm very honest, because when people want to help, sometimes we may try to help, but we may hurt. So even as a professional therapist, you need to know when to refer a person out, because referrals are very, very important. And like I said, going back to, do a person need therapy? Only you, the listener, can make that judgment call. You know, if you've been struggling lately, if you've been having troubles with your thoughts, feelings, moods, you've been experiencing a loss of enjoyment, a loss of motivation, people are feeling, if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you don't like yourself, if you think that it would help if you talk to someone like a mental health professional, then give someone a call. Because, again, therapy can help. Even if you don't think you need therapy in regard to try to justify it, it can still help. Like a lot of people, individuals might be thinking therapy is only for crazy people. I'm not crazy. This is an old-fashioned stigma. We know that often prevents people from getting the little help that they need during a difficult time. That stigma might hold individuals back from their right to this, you know, preventing them from returning to their and turning their entire life around. This stigma needs to go away, because mental health care is not or has nothing to do to be afraid of. It's here to stay, and it's awesome. I want to say, Amalia, we do need more people in the field. When we're talking about a lot of it's happening on a day-to-day basis. I tell people I would love to sit down with Trump. I used to want to talk to Charles Manson, but he's no longer amongst the living. But people need somebody to talk to. So they need somebody sometimes to give them a reality check because there's so much stuff we're dealing with. We're dealing with childhood pervasive developmental disorders. We're dealing with marital issues. We're dealing with, and I want to say this too, just to let the listeners know, a lot of times couples want to run to therapy when they're fighting, and they want couples counseling. It is unethical and not wise for a therapist to engage in couples counseling when there's active domestic violence because it's dangerous. And what happens is, even though you may want to work your issues out, the therapist cannot put their blood, I mean, put their life, nobody's life, and have it on their hands. Let's talk about that a little bit, Amalia, because we find that a lot of times when individuals come to us, stuff is so out of control. What do you think about that in regards to when you're talking about domestic violence issues and people wanting couples counseling?
So a lot of things. I think a lot of things. To begin with, just so that you know, it's very let me talk as a therapist. As a therapist, it's a very helpless and hopeless feeling. Because under the state mandates, the California law, I cannot report abuse on someone who is an adult. So if that person is between 18 and 64, does not have a developmental disability, they have to, they're the ones that have to report a crime. I still do it. I still call on welfare checks and all of that. In the therapeutic setting, I cannot. I mean, if there's domestic violence, I can meet with the person individually, but not as a couple. So individually, I would meet with the victim to say, you know, this is what a healthy relationship looks like. This is what an unhealthy relationship works looks like. This is what's going to happen to your children and to your family if you expose your children to the emotional abuse or the physical abuse that's happening in your household. And if it's the perpetrator, I say, you know, let's look at what anger management is. Why are you going that? What is the root of your anger? Because our anger is rooted in some kind of shame or guilt or something that we're hiding. So therapeutically, I would have to see each one individually. I can't see it as a family unit. But it is very frustrating not to have my hands tied.
Right. And you know what? And I want to say this, Malia. I just found some information because I know the laws have changed. And it is reportable if there's active domestic violence in a home and there's children in a home. If the children are witnessing domestic violence, it is now reportable. And we have a duty to ethical duty to intervene. And I noticed that like when you go to different doctor's offices, Kaiser was one, that they have flyers in the bathrooms. If you are a victim of domestic violence, you can call out crisis hotline number because safety is very important. It's about safety. And this article, even though it's a couple of years old, it says why we don't recommend couples counseling for abusive relationships. And even though we know that therapy can be very effective for some couples who are working through difficult relationship issues, however, if abuse is present in the relationship, we do not recommend that couples seek counseling together. In order for couples counseling to be successful, both partners must be willing to take responsibility for their actions and make adjustments to their behavior. Abusive individuals want all the power and control in the relationship and will focus on maintaining that imbalance, even if it means continuing unhealthy and hurtful behavior patterns. Even though many calls that people call the hotline have related stories of trying and failing at couples counseling because of an abusive partner, focuses on manipulating the sessions to place blame, minimize the abuse, and attempt to win over the therapist to their side. If the therapist tries to hold the abusive partner accountable for these tactics, they will often refuse to attend further sessions and may even forbid their partner to see the biased therapist again. The abusive partner may even choose to escalate the abuse because they feel their power and control was threatened. So safety, safety, safety is very important. So it is best to see individuals separately and also to develop a safety plan because the abuse does not have to be just physical. It could be verbal, emotional, psychological, financial, sexual, and you don't want to put a person in harm. So if anyone knows anyone that is in an abusive relationship or if you are an abusive partner who wants to change, you can call this number, which is 799-7233 or chat online. They have advocates there to support individuals and help them talk through their options. So I don't want individuals to think that they can't get any help because they're struggling or because they view themselves as a bad person, because that's one of the things also within when we talk about mental health, mental illness. A lot of times for mental wellness, it's individuals feel hopeless and they feel that no one can help them. There are people that can help. But by that same token, you have to reach out and get some help. And ultimatums don't work. Bribery don't work. You have to be willing to go in and get that help. And a lot of times, too, Amalia, I found that when individuals do receive counseling and they start to change, sometimes their family don't know how to deal with that change because they're not used to it. And then they feel like they've been doing all of this work, or what happens is they'll go to therapy, find out about themselves, improve their self-esteem, their self-worth. They start to grow, they start to glow, and they realize, you know what, I don't think I want to be with this person. And then the person gets mad at the therapist, because being a therapist can be a dangerous job, Amalia. It can really be dangerous.
It sure can.
Now, we have 4 minutes left on the air. And, again, if you want to call in because you have any questions in regards to, and my phone is blowing up, but I don't want to answer these phone calls. I don't know why people are calling me versus sending me either text messages or emailing me. Meaning, if you have a question and you want to email me, you can email me at jabneylmft@gmail.com. Or you can go to my Facebook page, or you can go to my LinkedIn or Instagram if you have any questions. And we only have a few minutes left on the air, and I will gladly, either myself or Amalia, assist with answering any questions that you may have. Because, like I said, we want to make sure that individuals get connected with the right therapist and that they find someone that they feel comfortable talking to and that can help guide them in the right direction, because we don't want anyone to feel stuck. We don't want anyone to feel manipulated. We want you to be able to be able to grow in what area it is that you feel that you may be struggling with. Now, Molly, we have a few minutes left. What do you want to leave the listeners with?
I think I have three things. I think when you do begin therapy, not if, but when, it's very important that you track your progress. So how will you know if you are progressing? And so what I tell my clients to do, which some do, some don't, is to actually track it. There's something called bullet journaling, which is a bujo, which is a whole topic that we can talk about later. But actually track if you're feeling better. Make a short-term and a long-term goal and track your progress. And so, you know, when we're in our day-to-day things, we don't see our progress, but if there's a way to track it, you know, and there's mood trackers, it's just a bunch of grids that we color in according to our moods. If your problem with depression is just getting up and brushing your hair or brushing your teeth, because when you're depressed, you don't feel like doing any of those things. So track your progress would be one. The second thing that comes to mind is looking at mental illness like a cough or a cold. If someone had a cough or a cold and they called in sick to work, you wouldn't tell them, oh, just get up, you're fine. And it's the same thing with depression. You have to look at it as a cough or a cold. You need the medication to get better. And that's what our mental health is. But, you know, the way that society has been going, that's not how it's viewed. So there's a commercial. I'll try to find it and send it to you, Jeanette. But I saw something on Facebook. You know, there's always those short videos. And it's this guy, he has a cold, and his friends come over and they take his cold medication. They say, you don't need medication. You just need to go outside and go to the beach, or you don't need medication. You know, he calls in sick to work, and his boss is just upset. You know, you just have a cough, come in. So that's how we have to look at mental health. The last thing I would leave everyone with is in my personal life, I raise butterflies. And when butterflies emerge from their cocoon, there's a lot of quotes and all of that about them, they go through a physical struggle. And it's in that struggle that they become the beautiful butterflies that we see. So I think there's a Maya Angelou quote now, too, that we don't see that struggle of what that butterfly did to become this beautiful thing that we are in awe of. And that's what our life is. Our life is a bunch of struggles that we have overcome to become this beautiful person that we are. And we, each of us, bring something very valuable to this earth. So just because you feel that you are not, your life is not what your neighbor's is, you still have a purpose and you still have a reason for being here, and you are valued by somebody. And I think with a lot of my clients that have suicidal ideation, they feel that they are not valued. They don't feel loved. They don't feel like they belonged. And it's when I say to them, okay, so who's going to miss you when you're gone? And then that's when we realize that we mean someone to something to someone. And so
gotcha.
For those of you
now, I'm going to stop you there, Amalia. I want to thank you for listening. And join me next week as we're going to be talking about understanding childhood trauma. And tomorrow I will be on the air with Pastor Dan Estelle as we're going to be talking about the battle of the flesh. So until tomorrow and until next week, remember, you got this. Thank you, Amalia. Thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.